Welcome to the Astrology University podcast, helping you find insight, inspiration, and meaning through the study of astrology. And now, on to the show.
Welcome to the Cosmic Eye, the Astrology University podcast, in which we will look at the month ahead and the challenges and opportunities that are coming. This is the podcast for the Taurus season. I am Alejo Lopez, your host, and today with me is the one and only fantastic Vanessa Montgomery. Vanessa is an astrologer and a writer, and she used to be the host for this podcast. So actually, this is where I met her. So I'm very, very excited that you're here, Vanessa. Hi.
Hey, Alejo. Hi, everyone. Hello again. Hope you've missed me.
Yes, of course they have. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me back. It's nice to come back on the other side, actually, of the co-host chair.
Nice. Great. So before we move into Taurus season, I would like to mention that if you like the podcast, the best thing you can do to support us is to share it with friends and people who might be interested in it. And of course, we would also love to hear your feedback, or if you have any thoughts or reflections to share, you can do so at the Astrology University email, which is help@astrologyuniversity.com. All right, so let's move into Taurus. When I think of Taurus, I think of the idea of the Earth giving all of this abundant life, the exuberance of life. So I think of all of the colors, the flavors, and the smell of spring. I have this kind of overwhelming, sensational feeling of sensitivity, of, you know, living the world through the senses. That's what I mean. Sensibility, you say in English, actually, right?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, senses is in there, isn't it? The senses.
Yeah, exactly. What about for you? What's the first picture you get in your mind when you think of Taurus?
I do think of verdant nature and, you know, the lush green fields. It's just nature, really. Green nature, the earth. And of course, here in the Southern Hemisphere, it is autumn. So because we understand the idea of what Taurus represents and the season at this time when the sun is in Taurus in the Northern Hemisphere, I still do think of spring. But where I'm living, I mean, it might be spring, it might be fall. There's not so many seasonal distinctions, actually, because it's quite warm. But if I was still living in Melbourne, which is quite south, you know, they do have a fall, as Americans call it, autumn. The leaves are, you know, starting to brown. And the funny thing is, Taurus is all those colours too. It's those earthy colours. It's not those bright, clear colours all the time, like, say, maybe Gemini or Leo. It is these earthy colours. And I find, as a Taurus rising person, those colors really suit me. It's like textures, like wool, not like plastic yellow neon. That's so not Taurus, but these earthy natural colors are, you know. And of course, Alejo, you are our classic Taurus today representing.
I'm your classic Taurus because I am a Taurus, yes. And I was born also in the Southern Hemisphere, so I always had the question if we should switch the signs and if I was more Scorpio or Taurus. And I don't know, I feel I'm a Taurus. I don't feel I'm a Scorpio. but I do get this, what you're saying, this idea of the presence of nature, even when it's a Scorpio, even if it's autumn, the presence of nature and the idea of the multiplicity of colors that nature offers, even if it's autumn. Like you go and you have all of these different reddish colors, different browns, different greens. So I agree with you, actually. Yes.
Yeah. And over the entire axis, no matter where you are, there's a real, now that we're talking about it, there's a real focus on the color palette and the textures and the movement from, it's either growth or it's kind of decay, but it feels like there's a lot of action going on for fixed signs.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's all about nature for sure.
Yeah, and talking about fixity, Taurus is a fixed sign and it's an earth sign. So when I have to teach and I have to explain what Taurus is about, I always say this is the fixed of the fixed elements. It's like the most fixed you can get. So this has gave us title of being a bit stubborn. And I would say we're not stubborn, we have tenacity. We keep our grounds when we want something. And also, I would say we approach life with a different speed. So when we have achieved, when we have arrived to a conclusion, probably took us a long time to get there. So if you want to make us change our mind, it's going to take you a long time. It's not that we are stubborn. It's that you need to follow. You need time. Yes.
Yes. Lots of time. And Taurus does rule eons. It's not, doesn't need to move quickly like the next sign, Gemini, which is why the bookends probably are the fastest signs, Aries and Gemini.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think so. Yes, I agree.
So I'll just share a little moment about Taurus rising and time. So I slept in because I slept through my alarm because it's morning here. And my dreams were sending me actually really great dreams. I come back to sleep, come back, you know, like the sirens in the sea, you come back into the sleep. And I was dreaming about famous people that I love, like Kate Blanchett. And so it was tempting me. My dreams were tempting me with this great story. And Kate Blanchett is a Taurus, and sleeping in is definitely Taurian, you know, like this slow start to the day. And I do like slow starts. And they say the rising is how you meet each situation, including the day and the morning, how you get up. And I'm all about someone bringing me a nice cup of chai. Slowly.
Very nice. Yeah, it's a great way of starting the day. Very good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who did you choose the classic Taurus?
Well,
after me, of course, because I'm number one. But of course, in the second place,
you are our in-house classic Taurus. So any Taurus questions, field them to Aleo. So my classic rising is Amanda Palmer. So this just came to me last night. So if no one has heard of Amanda Palmer, she was big around, when was it? Like over the last 20 years, really, she's been active. She's an American musician and kind of performance artist. And she got in quite early on Kickstarter and crowdfunding before a lot of people understood what that was. And I'm using her because she's a Taurus and she talks about the money, and she gets down for it as a woman and an artist talking about the money, really ripped to shreds. But she also has a very loyal fan base to balance that out. She's got the polarity going on. So she's got Jupiter conjunct Sun in Taurus, so she's extra straight off the bat. South Node in Taurus, Moon and possibly Mercury, depending on her birth time. We don't have a time. So she has got a TED talk called The Art of Asking, and that talk has been watched. I've got this written down, actually. Let me just have a look. Millions of times, 12.9 million views.
Wow.
It's a very popular topic. It has been up for a long time because that was in 2013. But, 2010 she left her album because she lost control of what she was doing, and she's quite alternative, and they were trying to make her be more mainstream to appeal to everyone. And so she got herself out of the contract and started funding herself. She decided to connect in person with her audience. And, you know, you can see her crowd surfing, you can see her, like, people writing on her body. And to me, this is all really Taurus, about the body. I want to feel you, I want to be near you. I don't want to be separate. And as a performance artist, she wants to connect with her audience, but I still think it's this like in-person connection thing that's maybe she's embodying something that's very Taurus. So she went to the people that follow her to also be the supporters, but connect more, and extremely successful. So she went for $100,000 on this Kickstarter and she got 1.2 million.
Wow.
Yeah. And the media couldn't deal. They couldn't deal with this like fecund, abundant Taurus, Sun, Jupiter and Taurus. I mean, what do you think is going to happen?
I wish I was a Sun, Jupiter in Taurus. My Jupiter is very far away.
Well, I was thinking maybe I should start a Kickstarter. I've got Sun, Jupiter in Sagittarius.
It could work, definitely.
But they're wide. They're quite wide. So, yes, The Art of Asking. Check out her TED talk. So this is some quotes from her. So she says, we shouldn't fight the fact that digital content is freely shareable. She suggests that artists can and should be directly supported by fans. So I think she was really ahead of her time with all of this, because now it's much more understood, and we are now at another level of, you know, this generative large language writing, ChatGPT, and also the Lensa app, which, as we know, uses all the artwork already on the web and then creates something else. So it's like this is the next stage after what she had to go through. So it'd be really interesting to see what she had to say about those, if she has anything to say. But she's just saying this stuff isn't going away. How can we best make it work for everyone? So she also talks about the split between like talking about money, or money versus art, or money versus the artist. And she said it's like money is dirty and art is pure. And, of course, money being, you know, resources, value. She calls it like energy, and it's very Taurus and earth. It's the earth stuff. She says that division and polarities, well, I'm thinking it's Venusian, you know, like talking about women and money, or women talking about money, and she's a really good example of that. So she said there's still a really weird feeling there, and she was really taken down in ways that have been pointed out that men haven't, as I mentioned. And I think the Venus and Taurus needs a lot of healing and repair, like to be remembered around these things. And I'm thinking when Chiron moves from Aries to Taurus, that group having their Chiron return, and also generally we're going to see these issues come up even more. That's going to be interesting. So something
I agree. So as a Taurus, when you think about this idea of Taurus and a Scorpio being opposite to each other, it means that behind the physical reality of Taurus, there's this other reality, which is Scorpio, right? It's a hidden reality, which is about transformation and change. And you know, we were talking once with Fernanda Paiva, and she was saying that sometimes we have these beliefs that rich people are evil, which may be partially true in some levels, but if you really think that everyone who has money is evil, then you're never going to be able to get money unless you want to become evil. Mm. And I think it's like a very Taurus way of looking at life. Well, I mean, money is part of life and we need it.
Well, that's the structure that our society is using, a particular capitalist structure, and it definitely has its problems. I think, yeah, it's people, but then people can be so locked into a particular system, unfortunately. It's definitely not the money, it's the system. And then it's people's ethics and opportunities. It's so complex. But I agree, if in this system you think that, you know, there's plenty of people with no money that are pretty damn evil. You know, power, you know, Scorpio's power. Mm. So it's, you know, money's power as well, energy's power. So I think it's about that. Yeah, it's money and power. And Taurus is the money, and I guess Scorpio is the power if we're looking at that axis. But, yeah, there's a lot of things about healing your money wound. And I would say when Chiron goes into Taurus, we're really going to see a lot more of that. So, yeah, healing your money wound. Working class people are taught up to vilify and have this weird divide. We're all just people against people with money. My dad had that. He's a working class Scottish person. And working class Scottish people, from the old days at least, they are really weird about people from a different level. Like in Australia, we don't so much have those social hierarchies financially. Mm-hmm. But, of course, in the UK, it's quite extreme. So he comes from that. And I would always push against that and say that's ridiculous. Basically, I don't want to stay in your little working class bubble, actually, even though he knew people from all sorts of places. Mm. He was a musician, but he still just had been indoctrinated. So I totally agree with that idea, and Fernanda's too. That's something we could do in Taurus season, actually, reflect on our attitudes towards money. What are we projecting towards it? How do we feel about it? Someone else I heard say, a friend of mine, Chelsea, she said that the way, not always, but often you can look at, start talking about the way that you view your parents and your relationship with your parents, and then transfer that to money and see if it's very similar. But I guess we could go to Venus in our chart. We could go to the second house. We could go to where the earth signs are, particularly Taurus, and look at where all those attitudes overlap and start to become more conscious about it, since the sun consciousness is going through Taurus this season. Heal your money.
Yeah, great. It's a great thing to do. Yes. Because I mean, the first thing we think about things to do in Taurus season is it's like pleasure, enjoyment, physical experiences. But I think we're going now tapping into something deeper, which I think makes a lot of sense. Take care of your finances. Are you happy with your finances? Are they representing what you think is valuable? Like when you invest money, are you investing money in things that you think are worth it? And then when you, especially if you are an independent worker, like most astrologers are, are you really getting the amount of money you think you deserve? And what changes you need to do in order to do that? Yeah, I think it's great. I was also thinking of the idea of being an earth sign, the opportunity for grounding. Like, you know, in Aries, we have this kind of power drive to do things. And when we get to Taurus, it's like, okay, well, let's see if it's going to work in the real world. You know, make it grounded, make it the project, make it real, manifest it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Get something constructive happening. Be constructive with it. I always say about Taurus is about consolidating. Yeah, Aries goes and gets it happening, and then Taurus has got to do something with it and lock it down. Like, what are you going to build into the foundation now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Fantastic. So let's go into the most important section of our podcast today, which is what's happening day by day. Well, not day by day, because we cannot stop in 30 days, but let's see the key features of the season.
Yeah, so let's look at the headline. So, of course, we go straight off the back of an eclipse on a second new moon in Aries. We go straight into Taurus season and into this loads of planets, big pile up in Taurus, so really Taurus and fixed energy, Earth heavy, and straight into a big square, which also bookends the season, this massive run of Taurus planets in this massive fixed square, grand square. So a lot of tension, a lot of immovable tension.
Yes. So the 20th of April, the sun goes into Taurus, and on the same day we have the new moon and the eclipse. So the sun and the moon are at 29 degrees of Aries. Am I right? Yes. And the sun and the moon are 29 degrees of Aries, and they are squaring Pluto at 0 degrees of Aquarius, right?
Yep.
So that's the huge tension that is happening. And I think it's interesting that we have this second new moon at 29 of Aries. Like, you know, we started the astrological year with a new moon in Aries. Like, yeah, I want to do everything. And now at the 29 degrees, it's like, okay, are you ready? Because, you know, it's like a second opportunity to face and check if you have the power and the stamina and the courage to self-assert yourself. And I don't know, how do you see this square to Pluto? I feel like it might involve facing kind of hidden fears or power issues, maybe. How do you see it?
Well, I've broken apart by, you can look at the moon, Pluto square, the sun, and of course the moon's moving through Taurus because it's just come off that Aries conjunction with the sun straight into Taurus. So we get the moon through Taurus and then the moon through Taurus at the end. So you can split it by the planets and you can split it by the signs. So with the planets, yeah, Pluto's always about power and owning your power, or feeling like if you're projecting that Pluto, yeah, oh, maybe it's the rich people's fault, they're evil. Or maybe it's true, maybe there is a big, you know, power play at work. I think it can also be with the signs. I was thinking about Pluto in Aquarius being maybe power. It can be power of the people, but it could be power over the people. Taurus is mine and my stuff and my land and my money and my body. And it could be a fear of, or like say Pluto in Aquarius is like the collective. Taurus doesn't want to share their stuff. It wants some of its own stuff. It's in the
second. Oh my God.
Massive square between these two ideologies, actually, and two paradigms and way of being. And that's how I really saw that square coming up, actually.
And I'm thinking also, as you were saying this, I was thinking the idea of Bitcoins and like virtual reality. I think Taurus does not trust all of these technological advances, which are more Aquarius-like. So I think maybe there is also a tension between what we feel is real and the power that we're giving to these entities that are 100%. Who knows where.
100%. I was thinking a little along those lines too with mind versus body and, virtual versus real, intangible, because it's like concept and thought with the Aquarius, and then Taurus isn't interested in ideas so much as, well, how's that practical? You need to ground it in the moment for the earth signs, I think. Yeah. And the other thing was science versus just your body. Like we've already seen, like, and we can see all these new inventions with, oh, we can make so much money out of, not we, but large companies can make a lot of money through pushing out certain things en masse onto everyone, one size fits all with these new technologies. And I think that's a real square because, you know, science is dictating, well, this is what we're going to do to you and you all just have to have it and we're going to make a lot of money out of it. So just take it, or you can't have access to the group. Like there's a lot of fear around what's happening, say, in China with the social credit system and, you know, the technologies coming along where that's really possible, plus so much more. And I think that could be a bit of that square as well, because these things need to learn to work together. You can't just have one dominating the other. They have very different interests, the Taurus side and the Aquarius side. And I think with the Pluto in the Aquarius, it doesn't look good, but it so what is a positive of that? How could that be a positive in terms of the power of the people, so that it does also override your own autonomy? Because, you know, we've got the sun and moon. That's very personal in Taurus.
Yes. Mm. And I, you know, I think how can we get this to a personal level? So if you have any planets at 0 degrees of fixed signs or at 29 degrees of cardinal signs, let's say, maybe you will feel particularly compelled to face this questioning. But then even if you don't have anything, I think maybe it will be a season, like you were saying about managing your finances. It might be a season about trying to see where you stand in this relationship between virtual reality and physical reality, between science and body, between spirit and body, perhaps. And these kinds of things.
And it's also, you know, there's so many people getting swept up in social media waves. And, you know, we can see all this playing out on social media. So just to be aware of the archetypal themes and fears and hopes and wishes, and don't get caught up into it. Just be a bit more observant and reflect on what is actually meaningful for you, and don't kind of add fuel to the fire, I think.
Yeah, and I was looking at the Mars there, who is the ruler of the new moon, because the new moon happens at 29 degrees 50 minutes, so it's like almost at the end, but it's still ruled by Mars. And Mars is sextiling the Mercury-Uranus conjunction. So I think there is this aim or this gate, this doorway to being able to reflect about this, being able to come up with new ideas, with new solutions. This idea that Mercury, you know, is this god that can unite, can make a bridge between different realms. And there being with Uranus, bringing this whole new perspective. And I'm thinking actually this may have been manifested. So people don't know, but we had to stop for a minute because we were having a lot of problems with the technical side of the recording. I don't know if it's this Mercury Uranus being manifested already in our recording.
True. So yeah, so I mean Uranus is in Taurus as well. That's the thing, this big pile up. So I think that we can't escape the technology side of things, you know, and advances and progressiveness, and like there's so many bizarre things happening in Taurus fields right now, and it's, you don't ignore it because it is the time to look at these things because Uranus is in Taurus. That's a fact, and it's always an opportunity because it won't be back for our whole lifetime. This is our one go at Uranus in Taurus, so work to get it right, at least in your own life.
Yeah, exactly. And I was also looking at the Mars squaring Chiron I think in some ways it echoes this Pluto squaring the sun and the moon with this idea of who has the power. You were saying about power of the people, power over the people, and Mars ruling this new moon. I think there is this sense of who has the power, but in this case it's squaring Chiron in Aries, which I think is also talking about who has the power, who has the possibility of self-determination, of being able to self-assert. So I think
for this new moon in Aries that we're coming off the back of, yeah.
I think those are a lot of questions that we may have in a personal level. And like you were saying, I really like what you said, in a collective level, when we might see all of this in social media and stuff. So be ready to be careful, because we sometimes get, you know, triggered by it and we get it so engaged and we stop seeing it from a little bit of a distance.
Yeah, like the Twitter storms. And also it's interesting knowing the astrology, as many listeners I'm sure already understand, who is it that picks up these signatures? Like over this big Mars in Gemini retrograde that we had, Elon Musk was one of the people that really picked that up, you know, literally with Twitter and his Venus in Gemini, and it was all like firing off bits of his chart. So, of course, he's going to be able to capture some of that. And, yeah, look at what's underpinning it all. And they're kind of like, it's funny how people, there'll be someone that takes that role. So if it wasn't them, would it be someone else? Mm-hmm. Well, they get to play it out for us. They're kind of doing what celebrities do. They're capturing our own projection. So we mm-hmm. still get to watch this play through. So what is it to draw back that projection and own it in our own lives and work through it that way?
That's a great idea. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you see it, I would say try to see what it makes you feel. Try to see like what kind of emotions it kind of bursts within you, because I think that's
Is the feeling and what are you thinking? Like, what are you thinking about this person you know nothing about? Mm-hmm. What values are you placing on them? Like, draw it back. Well, where do you see that in your own life, or where do you express that, whether it's positive or negative? You really, that's the way you own those things back and bring the light of the sun of consciousness. It is Taurus season back. I think that's one of the most valuable exercises that we can do on a regular basis is that.
Yeah, I agree. Fantastic. So if we move on, we get Mercury retrograde on the 21st of April, right?
Let's see. So, yes. So I've written down the whole cycle. So 21st of April at 15 Taurus, and just for the whole cycle on the 1st of May, hang on. I got this right. I'll just go up. Sorry. The Mercury retro shade started 7th of April at 5 Taurus. Mercury retrograde at 15 Taurus on April 21. And then Mercury will go direct again at 5 Taurus, May 14. And then finally Mercury leaves the post-retro shade, the shadow, 15 Taurus on May 31. So it's an interesting Taurus season because it's just this whole Mercury retrograde over the season in Taurus. Yeah.
And this whole thing that what we were saying before about like paying attention how you do finances, because Mercury in some ways it's a ruler of merchants.
Yes.
And inter-exchange. So it's like it's a perfect system to think about if what I'm inter-exchanging with other people has the worth and value that I'm giving to it. Yeah.
And that idea around, again, that like, well, how do I actually relate to it? Like, what do I think about it? Like, what words am I giving it? How am I projecting this onto other people? Where am I placing myself within this? What's the value on myself? They say you can't, if you don't have the self-worth, how can you ask for what you're worth?
Exactly.
Or the opposite, you know, trying to fill a void.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a really interesting edge to this one. And I'll also say that Mars is finally coming back into bounds, because it's been out of bounds for all these months going on from the big massive retrograde cycle it had in Gemini. It was also out of bounds apart from everything else. Like Mercury was retrograde at the time as well, for some of it, its ruler, and there was just so much going on. And over that period, it was pretty crazy. And that was, again, the Twitter thing and just so much. so much. So that comes back into bounds. I've got it written down, 27th of April.
So nice.
Yeah, in this season. So at least that settles down.
Yeah, it's also like a grounding feeling, right? With Taurus season, Mars comes back. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can ground down. And I have to say, after Aries season, I'm feeling exhausted. I just need some good sleep-ins and some picnics out in nature and really do the Taurus things, to be honest, and just rest, draw energy from the sun and the earth and take it a bit slow. Eat well, like start, like it's get some juicing going on, vegetable juices.
Yeah.
I think I peaked too early.
The Mars season was really, I think it was draining for everyone.
Yeah. It's exhausting. Yeah. I'm just so exhausted. So, yeah, I think. How you go?
On the 28th of April, Mars will square Chiron. I mean, the square that started on the new moon is perfected on the 28th. And I think this idea of being trying to ground oneself, I think might be also this square, like accepting how much power you have, how much drive you have, and how much power and drive you may not have. So kind of this idea of Mars coming out of bounds and then squaring Chiron, I think it's really about kind of slowing down a bit and getting back in touch with yourself and your restrictions, perhaps, or limitations as a human being. You know, we cannot do everything.
Yeah, like what? Where are you pushing so hard? It's wounding. Also, just, you know, accidents.
Yeah.
And, yeah, sharp things being Mars and then Chiron's in Aries. So just watch that.
Yes. And then on the 1st of May, Pluto goes retrograde. And you mentioned, when we were preparing, you mentioned the conjunction between Mercury and the Sun.
Yeah, so this, you know, Mercury retrograde is a big signature for this season, and that's its point where it's conjunct the Sun. So, of course, Mercury in the heart of the Sun, it could be illuminating, bringing some of these ideas around what this cycle is about for you to light. So it's always worth remembering that and just tuning in, or at least standing aside. And I just like to stand aside and note what is coming up over the over that period in these different areas. So what comes to light? What message comes to me? Who is the messenger? Is it a dream? Is it an aha? Or is it like a particular train of thought that I'm having at the time? And I just tend to, sometimes you don't realize till later that night or that week and you're like, oh, that's what that was.
It's beautiful. This is we call it Kazimi in traditional astrology. And I think it's a beautiful image, yeah. Like the messenger is together with the sun. So it's like this kind of powerful message gets enlightened, yeah.
Yeah, and if you think about people natally with the sun conjunct Mercury, they talk a lot. They're very good at expressing themselves through words. So we all get to tap into what that feeling is on that day. I think that's always worth, you know, just learning about what things feel like. I mean, that's Taurus as well. Well, what does this feel like? What does this look like? What's expressing? You know, it's like when you have the big squares in astrology, you might not have it in your chart with particular planets, but you get to feel into it over that period. So it's so worth keeping a journal and noting all of these things. And then when you have clients or meet someone with those things, you can be like, oh, I get the sense. I have a sense of that somewhat. I have a sense of it. I tuned in on the day.
Yeah, nice. And I would say check on which house it's falling, on which house this Mercury is conjuncting the Sun, because it might be lighting up a message regarding the theme of that house.
And that could be an actual messenger in that area of life.
Exactly. Yeah, beautiful.
There's that book I talk about a lot, and I put it in my books, actually, The Celestine Prophecy from years ago, a big trend at the time. I was right into it. And not well written, I thought, but really great concepts. And one was about really mercurial, the messenger. It said, you know, experiment with if you're out and someone stands out to you and you have a positive feeling or they remind you of a positive person. If it's not positive, walk away. But if it's positive, they seem to stand out in a crowd or whatever, go and just say hello and see what the exchange is, because the idea is it's synchronicity and they have a message for you as you have one for them. Just go see what it is. Just be like, hi, how are you? And see what happens. So I was in London when I was reading that, just passing through, and I experimented with it, as it's sometimes easier to do these things when you're out of your routine, Taurus routine, when you're out of your routine. And I've probably shared this on here before. I was looking for my friend Juliet, who's from Brisbane as well, and she lived in London, but this is pre-internet, so I didn't know how to contact her. But I had it in my mind, I've got to find Juliet. And so I go to see a movie at the Brixton, like, cinema, and I notice this usher. And, you know, I'm thinking, oh, this person wouldn't normally stand out to me. I'm going to go, you know, follow the experiment.
Nice.
Say hi. Anyway, this usher was Juliet's flatmate. Yep.
Wow. I never heard you share this story before.
And that was the first time I tried that experiment. And I've had other really good, interesting outcomes from doing it. So to me, that could be a very Mercury Sun conjunction. Like, who is the messenger? Who's standing? Who's got the messenger with the light around them? Who's drawing you to them? Another one was someone reminded me of Vivian Westwood, who I love, the designer. So I went to talk to her and I said, hi, I love your jacket. It reminds me of Vivian Westwood. And she was she was a Capricorn, this lady. So she embodied something that I was looking for at the time in terms of like an avenue for study. And she took me in, she took me under her wing, and she's like, she was so helpful. And that was, again, using this kind of guidance, way of being guided. And that could be quite retrograde too, because it's such a different way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Very nice. So on the 1st of May, we're all going to be paying attention to who stands out. We're going to be asking for messages.
Yeah, ask, like, and be aware of what you're naturally wanting to know or find out or find. Like, be just kind of be aware of that, or set your intention as well. Yeah.
Nice.
A ritual. Get into it. Embody it.
It's like a ritual. It's like nice.
Like some magic.
Then on the 2nd of May, we have the Venus square Neptune, is that right? Yes.
That sounds about right, yes.
And of course, it's important because we're in Taurus season. And also, I think it's important because the moon will be opposing Neptune. So in some ways, it's creating a T-square. In some ways, it is creating a T-square.
What is the moon doing?
The moon will oppose Neptune, right? On the 2nd of May.
I'm back on the day. So it is a T-square, triggering it for sure.
So the moon in Virgo is opposing Neptune in Pisces, so we have this kind of contradiction between our daily earthly needs and our visions and desires and imagination and wishes and illusions, and this is all being triggered in some ways, but the Venus in Gemini. And I feel it's, in one way, it's saying us, okay, love your illusions, love your fantasies, your love dreams, but also make sure to be grounded, to make sure they're going to work, because this is the moon in Virgo. And I think the Venus in Gemini is love the way you talk about them, love to express them, love to share them with other people. With people you care, perhaps, people you love, people who might understand. I feel there's this idea of the love of the pleasure of being able to verbalize and think about this opposition, which is, in some ways, it's picking back this idea of opposition between spirit and the world and the real world. So perhaps I think it might feel challenging, but I think it's an opportunity to say, love the contradiction, love the paradox, because you might get something out of it.
Yeah, well, Venus is on the apex. So the way through is through that Venus in Gemini, for sure. And Venus, of course, the ruler of the month, ruling Taurus. So that's extra special. I'm thinking, like, it's like fantasy versus your need to wash your hands and have a warm breakfast, you know? you know, with the moon, take care of those things. And I like a bit of a fantasy as well around something relational, like there's a fantasy around the Venus, like it's not, you might project onto someone some kind of fantasy. Can they really live up to it? What is it that you're projecting? Maybe the moon in Virgo helps us to bring it back down to earth and look at it from a reality perspective.
Yes, hopefully. Like,
will they bring me a cup of tea in the morning? Are they practical? Yeah, there's definitely a fantasy element and things are unclear with the Neptune Venus, but Venus is at the apex. So it is about communication, isn't it? And being a bit more realistic, that helps bring in realism, but through, communicating, being.
I think so, yeah. And, you know, Gemini has this double size, this multiple size of it. So I think it is the idea of being able to love the multiplicity of oneself. Like, how come we can have different sides and being able to love that and to value that.
That's a great way to put it, because these are, it's a mutable T-square. So it's about wanting to adapt and work with things. And on one side, you've got the fantasy with Neptune. The other side, you've got the practicality of what does actually make you feel safe and secure in relationships in Virgo, that, suggests the daily kind of stuff that needs to happen. You can't just go out without putting the rubbish out. You know, it's all got to be done. But I think that Venus in Gemini is well placed to deal with it. And like you said, it's a bit of both, seeing both, appreciating both, getting along with all of it, not like going one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very nice. And then on the 5th of May, we have the full moon and the lunar eclipse.
Yes, eclipse season is here. So something I wanted to mention was I follow way too many astrology accounts, I suppose, but I feel like everything's getting so amped up and hyped up, and I feel like social media is really killing us all on with the algorithms, just not helping. So it pushes people to be more and more extreme with what they are saying about astrology. And I've seen all sorts of, you know, bring it back to grounded Taurus. I've seen all these crazy promises, like every tiny little action in the heavens is, you know, we're all going to transcend and it's a whole new thing and it's a new cycle. It's not a new cycle. So there's the Saros cycle, which eclipses are part of, and of course, you know, they're about 19 years apart. So this one actually connects us to the last one, which was April 14, 1987 at 4 Scorpio. And before that, it was 2005 at 23 Libra. So you can track each cycle through. And this particular Saros cycle, 141, began in 1608 and it will end in 2492. So these are our lifespans as humans are tiny compared to these long cycles of eclipses. And you can look at Bernadette Brady's The Eagle and the Lark at the back of the book. She's got a big section on all the Saros cycle and she gives a theme to each one. It's quite interesting to learn more about that. So just keeping grounded and some sort of perspective on things, I think, would be really great to see for the astrology, including the full moons. If this is falling on a strong point in your chart, it might blow your mind. If not, maybe it won't, or maybe we can see it in the media play out, but it doesn't actually affect us unless we catalyze and get all emotional about it and freak out, like Aleo, you were saying, like, how does it make you feel? Look at the feeling in you, because it's been the trigger, this external trigger to still you live it out, but you have so much control over that. And of course, Scorpio is about control. So maybe that's bringing in a bit of balance to help ground things, like bring back that control.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we've got the, let me just get to the chart.
I agree. It's happening for people that are not looking at the chart. It's happening at 14 degrees. Well, at the end, 14 degrees, 58 minutes, I have it, of Taurus Scorpio. So let's say if you have something at 15 degrees, 14 degrees, it might be really triggering, but I completely agree with you. If you don't have anything there, well,
it might not be
reflect. Yeah, I mean, try to reflect on what it might mean, but it might not be so powerful. Yeah.
So basically, the middle of the fixed signs.
Yeah.
Yeah, the middle of the fixed signs. If that's happening for me, it's across my ascendant, descendant. So yes, something might come up, and maybe I'll stay home that day, as I do when these things are hardcore.
And so, drink a lot of chai.
Yeah, drink a lot of chai and just relax, and maybe stay off social media, or maybe do I think Scorpio full moon. One thing I used to love about working in hospitality actually was there's so many people around. I could really watch the astrology, and I could ask people of different signs and placements how they're feeling. So the Scorpios, I would always, when there was Scorpio moon or full moons, I would ask them how they're going with that. Or if they have moon in Scorpio, I'd ask them, because a full moon isn't just a full moon, it's also the sign it's in. And Scorpios wanted to be extra Scorpio, which was not be in public, and they wanted to be at home by themselves. Quietly. Reflect. Yeah. It's such a deep yin internal sign. It's not like a full moon in Sagittarius, let me tell you, or Aries. So, yeah, maybe this is something where you just want to get in a space of trusted, maybe one other people or a small group or by yourself, it's an eclipse, and just really feel some deep feelings, or watch a really emotive movie, or do something that's more like that, not that where you have to be light and bubbly, or put together a talk that's really hard hitting, or, you know, get into there. It's really powerful, Scorpio Taurus eclipse. It's intense.
Yeah, it's intense. Yes.
So get intense in a space that's safe for that, perhaps.
Yeah, and I love it because on the 7th of May, which is 2 days later, Venus goes into Cancer. So there's this idea of finding pleasure and love into self-nurturing. Like, Cancer is about nurturing others, but it can also be about how you take care of yourself. And Venus going into Cancer, I think it's also emphasizing this idea, because we are following the Taurus season, so we follow what Venus is doing, and Venus goes into Cancer. So she is saying, like, yeah, this may have been very intense these past 2 days. So make sure to protect yourself. Make sure to drink chai in the morning if that's what you love. Yes.
Bring it back. And Mars is in Cancer during this period too. So, yeah, it's pretty intense. And then the eclipses, you know, really sort of pinpointing something. And I find eclipses can really, really shut the door on something for good. It can just slam it. Like, that's it. If you've been trying to drag something out or keep something on life support, it's Scorpio. It will come along and just turn the machine off. Cut it, you know, purge it. Scorpio is purging physically. You know, what you need to clear out or get rid of emotionally, like what's really roiling, what you need to maybe get down and wrestle with.
Yeah.
Go to your therapist.
Yeah. And again, like, being this whole thing about value and worth, like, what do you need to transform perhaps to find this valuable sense of identity? Yeah.
Strip it back perhaps to the basics and own your power. You know, with that big square to Pluto through this season, and any time all these planets are going through the fixed signs early, it's about owning your power and taking it back, and just recognize where you've been giving it away, and love yourself anyway, and just be like, well, that's what we were doing, and now we're doing a new thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you're mentioning the square to Pluto, so Jupiter is at the last degrees of Aries. So he's getting closer and closer to perfect the square to Pluto. Pluto is at 0 degrees of Aquarius. We know now it's retrograding by the middle of May. We said it went retrograde the 1st of May? Yes. So by the middle of May, Pluto is retrograding, but it's still in Aquarius. So there's going to be this Jupiter who is at the end of Aries, and as he goes into Taurus, it's going to be squaring Pluto. So I think this will be felt almost during the entire season, I would say. And it's quite intense. And also by the end of the season, maybe we'll focus more on that on the next episode. By the end of the season, Mars in Leo will oppose Pluto.
Yes.
So we're going to have like a super tense T square.
Yep.
With Jupiter at 0 Taurus, Pluto 0 Aquarius, Mars 0 Leo. that I think it's building up from now. I mean, it's going to be building up from the Taurus system with this Jupiter squaring Pluto.
I agree. And it's, if you take into account the nodes, it's a grand square, big square, because the south node's finishing off that square. So very tense. And with Mars and Pluto in there as well, you know, Mars and Pluto are pretty aggressive. Like they're fairly violent. You know, if you see this in a natal chart, so you've always got to ask about violence, basically, or depending what house it's in, it can signify an abusive relationship and things like that. With, I think it's interesting Jupiter being there, because that could just set things off more. It's like it amplifies things. So that's quite explosive is probably a good word with Mars and Pluto. Fixed, it might be a bit more like of a slow burn, you know, control. Like imagine Pluto and Mars going head to head in fixed signs. You know, that could be a bit like no one's going to budge, are they?
Yes, I feel like it's like a big tension building up.
Yeah, it's very tense. So again, is this falling on points in your chart? If it is, you'll probably be drawn into this somehow and live it out. If it's not, you'll see it on socials maybe. You know, you've probably got something else going on that's a much bigger headline in your personal life.
Yeah.
Always have to remember. And again, this is so hyped up, I see online, and it's not taking into account your own transits. Like I've got, what is it, Saturn square my sun right now exactly, and for me that's my headline. Neptune square my Venus, I think it is, or Mercury, they're my headlines, and that's not necessarily the headlines in the sky. So I've got people saying, oh, you know, how are you going with this and that? I'm like, well, I've got Saturn square my sun, I'm really tired. So yeah, it's personal is more the point, unless you're watching the global, you know, machinations, which a lot of us love to do, and watch the news and the politics and the larger sort of geopolitical wave. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a great way of learning astrology, because if you know this T square is building up and you look at the news, you're going to see it in the news.
Absolutely. It's fascinating and we all love it. But yeah, definitely see where it lands. I've been talking about landing in the chart. Like how does it land and ground into the chart? Speaking of Taurus, that's the field for you personally. And then as a Leo, I love how you mentioned that. Yeah, how does it make you feel when you look out? That's also how it's, you're grounding it. You're bringing it in by looking out and responding to it. And it's having a relationship with that larger, you know, projection onto society, and then maybe feeding into that that's your relationship with society as well, and starting to be part of that larger movement in, changing society, moving it forward, pulling it backwards, whatever one is doing, hell-bent on doing.
Yeah. Great, fantastic. And then we kind of jumped over, because I went excited with the Mars in Leo, which kind of jumped over. On the 19th of May, we have the new moon at 28 of Taurus. So again, we have this thing that we have two new moons on the same sign. And I think it's quite interesting, because this one looks so much, to me at least, it looks so much lighter than the previous one with this new moon in Aries that we were seeing before. It's true, it's not in the same sign exactly, because the first one was in Aries. But at the end of Aries, right? So this new moon is trining Pluto. So I think it's like, I feel it is like, okay, the end of the process of this sense of reassessing yourself, reassessing your values and everything. And what did you achieve? What did you find now? What is the treasure? Pluto, you know, Pluto in Greek means the one that hides the treasures. So it's like, what is the treasure that you're getting from this whole season about reassessing your sense of worth and value?
That's a great way to look at it, especially, with the Taurus themes of value, Venusian, and that deeper hidden, the hidden power, the hidden resources, the hidden wealth.
Yeah, I think so.
It's an interesting bookend to the month. Like we work through all this tension and then, maybe we can scoop in and really realize what our power is and own it and not be afraid of it, not project it.
Yeah, nice. Great. So we're kind of wrapping up now, but let's see a few dates that may you know, we have this section when opportunity knocks. I learned this from you, actually. So you know better than I do. So some dates that may be prominent for certain things. I found the 25th and 26th of April, Venus is going to be on the midpoint between Mars and Uranus. And on the 27th and the 30th of April, the Sun is going to be on the midpoint between Venus and Neptune. So I feel these dates might be kind of powerful dates to think about love, relationships, sexuality, like what you want to get from them with Venus, Neptune, Mars, Uranus, Venus, and the Sun. Then on the 27th of April, the Sun is going to be in the midpoint between Jupiter and Uranus. So I think it could be also like a lucky day, a day where you can, you know, like unexpected luck coming out of nowhere and the Sun lighting up this opportunity. I really like your idea, Vanessa, of the Kazemi, the Mercury on the Sun, which was on the 1st of May. Yes. I really like this idea being this a lucky day, 1st of May. I also wrote on the 5th of May, Venus sextiling Jupiter. Maybe a good idea also for business, because Venus rules money, but also for love, right? And I don't know, do you have any other dates that maybe kind of...
I can't believe I didn't write the actual date down, but yeah, I had... Well, I thought the beginning and end of the season with all that Taurus, even though you've got the T-square and the grand square, there is that, but I just think the opportunity to tune into the Taurus-y, earthy stuff is really brilliant. Maybe more at the end of the season because, as you pointed out, Aleo, there's that trine from Pluto, so it's probably better. And there's just even more planets. So around that new moon could be super interesting. And there's a, when the sun is conjunct Uranus at one point and Venus in, it must be 2 degrees Cancer. There's a grand water trine with Saturn plus the south node, sextile, the north node. And I think that's an interesting one. So Venus is at 2 Cancer. Yeah, here it is, around the 10th of May.
Okay, very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's really nice. And, yeah, so that the Sun might light up those Uranus in Taurus themes. And what's the Moon doing? The Moon is in Capricorn, trining over to the Sun Uranus as well. So, I think that's one of the best days for that. You also got this T-square going on, but that grand water trine with the nice earth trines is good. Sun Uranus, yeah, breakthrough, liberation, breakout. What is it individually for me that is right or not right with technology or the way things are going, or just liberating myself, having a self-liberation moment, a moment of enlightenment.
Yeah, and you always have something. Like you were saying, there's also the T-square. It's never perfect, right? You always have something going. Yeah.
So along those themes, and it might just be, you know, Uranus, a surprise that day or a chance meeting that's interesting or a thought, or you discover a book or a concept or, something that can help liberate you, a tool for liberation. So, again, for me, this is all on my ascendant. I'm right into it. I'm loving it. Yes, liberation. And, you know, I've been calling astrology a tool for liberation. No surprise with Uranus transiting over my ascendant. And I never used to call it that before. So I'm bringing that to you with my Taurus rising ascendant situation. Something liberating, you know, with your body, maybe in the larger society with the Uranus in Taurus and also the Chiron in Aries, we've seen a lot of stuff around women's rights, reproductive rights with the Taurus Scorpio stuff. Maybe there'll be a positive shift with something or a law that passes or gaining some ground, you know, in that kind of liberation movement too. I hope so.
Nice. Yeah, I hope so too. And would you make that your takeaway mantra? Astrology as a tool for liberation. Do you have another one?
Yes, I did have another one as well. So, yes, let's go for liberation. And also it's sort of liberate the body too because it's Taurus stuff. So my takeaway is from Amanda Palmer, my classic Taurus, and she just says ask for what you want. She's got a book about this too based on the TED Talk. Learned to ask what you want. She saw so many artists that she knew just cringing at trying to ask for what they want, and, you know, heal that gap, the money divide, heal your worth, self-worth, all of that sort of stuff, you know. Go get what you want. Find the space between your power to get it and your desire for it.
Nice. Mine is, I took it from Greta Thunberg. She talks about the cathedral way of thinking. So the idea of the cathedral way of thinking is that you're building something that you don't know what's the last long-lasting impact of it. So I thought of this idea of Taurus being slow and being, we don't know how long it's going to take. So my takeaway mantra was, I was thinking of, I will build foundations even if I still don't know how to build the ceiling.
Start
doing the work.
Classic Taurus Leo. And yes, I wanted to mention and that's so great to bring us back to that. Yes, earth signs are about enduring, especially Taurus, fixed, enduring, building it to last, building foundations, of course, that last, that support the structure. And I was thinking about Egypt and the pyramids and the Sphinx, you know, they were built to last. They're over eons, and our tiny little time frame is just nothing compared to that.
Exactly.
In mind for perspective.
Nice. Great. So what's on your coffee table? What are you reading these days?
I've just finished Fame, The Hijacking of Reality by Justine Bateman. If people remember her from Family Ties, she works behind the scenes in the entertainment industry now, directing and writing and doing fun stuff like that. And I thought it was a really interesting delve into Neptune. That's why I'm reading it. I'm putting together a talk on Neptune and Fame. And so we get this great insight from someone that was so famous, so crazy famous. So she talks about what it felt like within that fame, and it's all sounds very, very Neptunian. So I'm looking at it from that slant. And, you know, obviously it's not an astrology book, but astrology is applied, so it's a good way of coming at Neptune from an applied place. So it's been really insightful. And she's just started to, it's a reasonably recent book, but she's just got caught an updraft for some reason, and I see it's like coming through socials again. So that's interesting timing for her and her own personal transits as well. What about your layer? You're reading
first. When is your talk about Neptune?
Literally Neptune and Fame.
And when are you going to do it? When and where?
Well, I just had the idea that it's something that I wanted to put together. And so the local chapter of like the Brisbane, UFA, it's called, asked if I wanted to do a talk. So I said, yeah, I'll do that one because it'll make me finish it. And then I'll just be ready to go for other things that I can do talks at. So if anyone wants me to do a talk on Neptune and Fame, I'm going to have it ready.
Exactly. Very good. I haven't started it yet. I mean, I've started the first pages, to be honest, but it's called Bad Girls by Camila Sosa Villada. It's an Argentinian writer. And I think it's an autobiography, or it has some autobiographical information. It's not an astrology book. It's not a fiction because it's autobiographical in some ways. And Camila, basically, she's designated male when she was born, but she begins to identify from an early age as a girl. And then when she grows up, she becomes a trans sex worker. So she writes all of these stories in this book. And I was told, I'm in Argentina now, and I was told, my parents said they wanted to give me a book as a present. And I said, this is what I want to read. So I just got it. I've just started. It looks very... Here it won many awards. It became very, very popular. So I'm very excited about it. Yes.
Yeah, wow. That sounds cool. And you'll have to tell us how it goes.
Yeah. Nice. And
what are we up to now? What we've got coming up?
What do we have coming up? So in Astrology University on April the 22nd, there's going to be a webinar on astrology and the individuation process with Chiron Legris, I think it's called, which I think it sounds quite amazing. On May the 6th, Darby Costello is going to be giving a talk on Mars and Saturn, and how these malefics can be seen actually as guardians of some kind of inner treasure. So I think this is going to be nice also. And then another thing I wanted to mention is on April 26th to May 21st, there's a short course by Kelly Sartiz and Tony Howard on the houses. And they're going to be talking about how to calculate the different systems, what they imply. And also they're going to be talking a lot about rulerships, house rulerships, which I think is amazing. That's why I wanted to mention it. Yeah. On my side, I'm going to be teaching on the 12th house, a webinar. I called it Darkness Before Dawn, the meaning of the astrological 12th house, on the 20th of May at the Faculty of Astrological Studies. Mm-hmm. And you, Vanessa, do you have anything else coming up besides the Neptune talk? Because you said after that you're going to be focusing on other projects.
Yeah, so I'm available for readings, of course, at astroallstarswithaz.com. You can schedule there. So I also have got, I've signed a non-disclosure, so I can't say much about it. I'm not sure when I'm allowed to talk to it. But it's funny that I did something on the TV, and it begins streaming May 30th. And I think it's interesting that it'll be in the season of the trickster, Gemini season, because there's a big theme in this show that is so about the trickster. The whole thing is about who's lying and who's telling the truth, who's real and who's not. It's so the trickster. So I'm just in one little segment.
Do you know if we can see it online?
It's going to be on, in Australia, it will be on Binge, but I'm not sure about other countries. I'll post about it once I'm allowed to, but it's very funny. It's very silly. I'm just doing astrology on there, but yes, it's so the trickster. So there's that. So yeah, come for readings. My books are out. Buy my books. They're so fun. And there's this local talk if you want to come see that if you're in Brisbane. So that one's actually not till July. I've got a little while to put my talk together. And open for business. So if anyone wants me to do a talk, especially the fame one, because it'll hurry me up to finish it, I'm available.
Nice. All right, great. Vanessa, thank you so much for being here. This was amazing. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Remember, if you have any ideas or anything you want to share, help@astrologyuniversity.com. All right? Thank you, everyone.
Stay cosmic.
Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology University podcast. I'm the founder, Tony Howard. Head over to astrologyuniversity.com, where you can find webinars and courses to help deepen your study of astrology. Study with some of the best astrologers in the field and check out our diploma program for those of you interested in working professionally or in developing the skill to analyze charts for yourself, your friends, and family. Hope to see you in class soon. And until then, take good care.